Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. It's Sunday morning here in London, and this is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are live again, another week of our Turning Towards Life project and practice. And I want to say, well, to both of us, Lizzie, welcome to us, but even more than that, welcome to everyone who's with us. We know that so many of you join us in our Facebook group, which is open to everyone. You can just search for Turning Towards Life, or listen to our podcast, or watch us on YouTube, or see us on Instagram. So there are lots of places to find this conversation, some live and some recorded. And we're going to do our ordinary thing of starting with a very deep and rich source, a piece of writing that's come from you this week, Lizzie. And it's such a treat when you bring your words and your wisdom and your big heart into this. And before we get going with any of that, I just want to say, whilst I'm speaking, to everyone who's listening, you may not know, if you are listening to this in the early part of 2021, we have just put together our first Turning Towards Life live event, which is an opportunity to come and join us and other people in conversation, using the same approach that we bring in Turning Towards Life. And it is in 3 weeks from today, on Sunday, the 18th of April, 2021, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. UK time. It is open to everyone. We would so love to meet you there. And you can find the details and also book yourself a place if you go to our website, which is turningtowards.life. And right there on the front page, you'll find exactly how to join us.
Such a thing to have a live opportunity to be together with the community that we've created. I'm just feeling that in this moment when you're saying it, Justin, and I feel really glad that we are heading towards not just speaking to each other, but speaking to other people and having them speak to each other too. I think that's a lovely thing. So today we're bringing this poem, which got the name Vulnerable after I'd written it, because I felt so vulnerable after I'd written it. And it's in some way what's just been letting itself settle in over the years, Justin. I've really wanted to let impermanence, the fact that we don't know what's going to happen next and that we're not here forever, genuinely settle into my bones. And I've got so many ways of pushing this away and denying it. And on the day when this poem came out, I felt like it was really, really close to me. This sense of impending loss that is inherent in all human life. And yet, sometimes I feel so far away from this and so much in denial of this. And so I managed to capture what it is to be really close to it. And I hope today it will bring us there and see what it is to let this be true instead of doing all the things we do to run away from the reality of it. So here we go. This poem is called Vulnerable. Connection and death are not fair as things that go side by side. The more I love, the more there is to lose. Of course, I just want not to love. Then there's nothing to lose. But then I can look at your cheeks and your lips and the creases behind your knees. And there's nothing else to do but sink my face into your neck and snuggle to the point where you're annoyed with me. To love and to need and to know that it's all in the context of temporary. To feel and to laugh and to know it's all going to end far too soon. It's too much for my all too human and clingy heart. It will surely break, be smashed to smithereens. Maybe it needs to break each and every day in preparation for the grand break, the one that will come when the time is that time. I fearfully withdraw, and within minutes I'm back there again, asking to be loved, offering my love and planning how we can be together, salivating at the ordinary moments of loading the dishwasher while you talk to me. Feeling my pulse race at the next time we can hug full body to body, even letting our knees touch, rubbing cheeks, knocking glasses, messing up each other's hair in celebration. I know I could stay in that withdrawn, safe, small space too, and protect myself against this tsunami of grief, that sadness, the avalanche of love. There's too much at stake. Our hearts are too bare. Our skin is too receptive to be able to stay there, open, ready, receptive. And yet we're here in these bodies. The body holds us to this deal. What else is there to do but love and be broken open by life, by love, by connectedness? I'm done for. So are you. We all are. There's no way out from love.
Thank you so much, Lizzie, for writing that and reading it. And I'm going to read the whole of it. And this might be, it feels to me like this is one of these weeks where I'm going to say to all of us, I'm saying this to me, but I'm saying this to everyone who's listening. If you can, now might be a really good moment just to pause. If Lizzie's words only began to reach you the first time, maybe the second time, see what you can do to let them in, because at least I could notice in myself, Lizzie, whilst you were reading, exactly the thing that you were writing about happening, all my defences against it coming up. So I'm going to try and read it and feel it too. Connection and death are not fair. I'm going to start again. Connection and death are not fair. As things that go side by side. The more I love, the more there is to lose. And of course, I just want to not love. Then there's nothing to lose. But then I look at your cheeks and your lips and the creases behind your knees, and there's nothing else to do but sink my face into your neck and snuggle to the point where you're annoyed with me. To love and to need, and to know that it's all in the context of temporary, to feel and to laugh, and to know it's all going to end far too soon. It's too much for my all too human and clingy heart. It will surely break, be smashed to smithereens. Maybe it needs to break each and every day in preparation for the grand break, the one that will come when the time is that time. I fearfully withdraw, and within minutes I'm back there again, asking to be loved, offering my love and planning how we can be together, salivating at the ordinary moments of loading the dishwasher while you talk to me, feeling my pulse race at the next time we can hug full body to body, even letting our knees touch, rubbing cheeks, knocking glasses, messing each other's hair up in celebration. I know I could stay in that withdrawn, safe, small space too, and I protect myself against this tsunami of grief, that sadness, this avalanche of love. There's too much at stake. Our hearts are too bare, our skin is too receptive to be able to stay there, open, ready, receptive. And yet we're here in these bodies. The body holds us to this deal. What else is there to do but love and be broken open by life, by love, by connectedness? I'm done for. So are you. We all are. There's no way out from love.
Thanks, Justin. So as you're reading, the thing that really was just happening to me is a kind of softening. Like a kind of surrender comes across me in this place, because it feels really true that when we really look, this is really the deal. You know, we're really vulnerable. Living is really vulnerable. And it's such a thing to feel the gift of this, which is a really kind of ordinary human gift of paying attention and receiving all of the tininess and the ordinariness as something that's really, really important. So I feel kind of immediately reoriented in the hearing and feeling of this. And of course, it simultaneously, there's I can feel the upwelling of the grief and upwelling of the sadness in my chest. But at the same time, the way I look upon the world and the people in it and you and this and having Weetabix before this conversation with Vesper, it's all like in Technicolor or something. Because the gift of it is that it's how to live well, in a way, like how to really live, even though that feels risky and grief-filled and sad and all the things. It's also beautiful and important, and nothing kind of taken as given, but it really, really is given. Like, it's not taken for granted, but it is given. So I can feel the ache of it and the reality of it. And also, there's a subtle way that it's kind of helping all of the other stuff that's going on in my life that's not so easy. This feels like it helps to hold that in the right kind of light and to not make things central that really don't belong central, but I make them central, maybe as an avoidance of this even. So I'm seeing that, of course, there's stuff that happens that it looks like I've got no kind of power over whether it's happening or not. But my relationship to that and where I put that in myself really gets addressed when I hear this, so that the stuff that shouldn't be central kind of gets right-sized. And then what needs to be central comes much closer to me.
I was so hit, Lizzie, when you started to speak just now. You said we're all so vulnerable, which of course is exactly what you've been saying just now and in these words that you've written, and it's really hard to hear it actually in one way. Because in all the ways that you say, at least I heard your read your poem and I thought, well, that's the story of my life. trying to avoid feeling how much I love people, feeling how much there is to lose, feeling the heartbreak in it, trying to avoid feeling grief. And in my attempts to try to avoid feeling grief, doing my best to avoid feeling too much joy or too much abandon or finding myself holding back, finding myself right in those moments when someone I really love is asking me just to be present with them and open to them. Those delicious moments that you write about in the poem, and finding a part of me coming back, coming up and going, no, 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 too risky, don't do this.
Yeah.
And it's not actually, I think, that being intimate with our lives and with other humans and is the risky thing, like being available to one another. The risky thing that part of me is protecting me against is all of the loss. And some of my inner strategies, you know, quite sophisticated. So I'm finding out that there's a part of me that generates fear so that I won't feel grief. So if I can be afraid of things, then I won't have to feel that. And there's another part of me that generates blankness, like just tuning out. And there are parts of me that generate resentment. And they're all ways of not experiencing that feeling that I touched into when you said we're all so vulnerable, to really feel what that's like. So there's volumes and volumes of this in my own experience. You got talking a minute ago about the givenness of things. So I also know that one of my ways of going to sleep is exactly in the territory that you were talking about. It's kind of like pretend that things are boring.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend that things are like taking up the sort of taken for granted mode of things. I can really easily get into everything's a kind of irritation, everything, instead of everything is this extraordinary, really temporary gift, and I'm going to be gone, and everything and everyone I love is going to be gone. It's easier to feel irritation at life than it is to really feel the bigness and the depth of it. And so your words are such an invitation into this radical something that's actually available all the time, which requires a huge amount of letting go, that sometimes I feel like I can, there are moments when I feel like I can get into it which is to let ourselves go into loving what's here and loving who's here. And actually I've been practicing this, in my own practice, it's come along sort of around about the same time as your words are coming, with a sort of parallel process. I've been practicing really, really fiercely loving people and really fiercely loving ordinary stuff, but not as a feeling like, oh, I'll see if I love this person, or if I love loading the dishwasher or sweeping the, you know, front doorstep, but instead reading into the part of your poem that is the part of the deal about who we can be, and going, okay, what if I really, really commit to fiercely loving this? And it turns out I can actually do that. Not all the time, but learning that as your words so starkly point and invitingly point out to us, that there's a choice on either side each time. Like, will I shut myself off from this, or will I step myself into it? And loving has been, I've tried lots of different orientations so far in my life, like acceptance or presence or, you know, different words for it. But actually I'm finding right now that fiercely loving, choosing to actually love one who is here, seems to me to be the most powerful antidote to the forces in me of go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. And it's frankly wonderful and terrifying in equal measure.
Yeah. I was just reflecting on what you were saying about the, what I've written down here is kind of the withdrawal that can happen. And the smallening and the safening that can happen, and how it's one of those strategies that you were talking about as well. So to feel small and insignificant and separate, I could see it as a kind of a consequence of the things that are happening. But I'm wondering what it does to see it as a way of avoiding this. Like, it feels quite helpful to see that it might be that, instead of just a consequence, that I'm withdrawn or that I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And just wandering into that and seeing what kind of protector part, what kind of part of me is arising if it was in protection of this, which is so understandable as well. Like this, I feel such compassion for myself in the withdrawing, in the smallening, in the separating, in the getting angry, in the whatever it is. It's also justifiable and so understandable and honorable and all of the things. And I'm finding it so extraordinary that it can all be because of this vulnerability. And so somehow this thing about connection and impermanence and death and all of the things that spin out of that, it feels such a central conversation to which I can just keep on returning and returning and attribute a lot to. So when I'm noticing what happens to me, one of the things I know, which is a kind of a complex one too, that's hard to unpick in a way, is that one of the ways that I avoid this is to catastrophize about all the ways that the connection could be taken away. So create like really quite far-fetched scenarios in my mind. And it happens upon me in my sleepiness, if you know what I mean, in my habitual poodling. I'll find myself in these like horrific events that are the very thing that would mean that everything was taken away and I'm heartbroken and nothing can be done about it. And I'm small and afraid, and I really have to discipline myself. You know, I have to say, hold on a second, I can stop now, because I can see that I'm avoiding actually being here by doing this. You know, I'm avoiding this vulnerability by creating and imagining the ultimate vulnerability. So it's a bit complex, and it happens a lot though. Like I'll just be walking along the street and all of a sudden I'm in some horrific catastrophic ambulance kind of situation with someone I love, and it's such a big strategy for me to just avoid what's actually going on right now, which is probably a deeply enjoyable, loving something that's available to me in those particular moments of when that thing happens the most. So I'm noticing the connection with the intensity of joy and love and that coming in simultaneously. And just noticing that, you know, probably for all of us, there's ways that we're in deep kinds of avoidance. And that's one of my strategies to stay away, is to kind of make it even worse than what's really possible right now, as a way of avoiding probably what's even worse.
Yeah. Gosh, our avoidance strategies are so intricate. And I'm really touched by what you said about how important it is to be compassionate to that of ourselves which does this. You know, to really see the goodness there, even though there's also a cost to us, that there's some part of us that is really trying hard to save us from something. And I'm really sort of smiling at the wonderful intelligence of the part of you that tries to save you from the magnitude of loss by having you already experience ahead of time the giant loss, so that somehow you won't have to experience the actual loss or something. It's like such a, there's enormous wisdom as a protective strategy in that part. And also, wow, look at what happens from it. Look at what gets missed at the same time. I was thinking about mine. So mine is that the way I've got is not imagining terrible things. It's just to withdraw now, so that I won't have to have the pain of withdrawal later. And just on Friday, we always gather together as a family on Friday night, and my son, Lior, was sitting and playing the piano, and he's such a wonderful musician, and he invited me to come and sit and get the guitar out and play with him. And it was so beautiful to sit and sing with him. And I could feel the part of me that 10 seconds in is like, get out, get out, get out, stop this, it's too much. And it's a real gift to have someone like him around, because he knows that bit of me, and so he can say, no, no, Dad, stay, do this with me. But there's this part of me that wants to go, break the intensity now, get out of this situation now, because it's heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking to feel, if I really let myself feel what it's like to be there, I'm going to have to face the magnitude of the grief that goes with it. So I'll save myself the, rather than anticipating the fear and the grief now and sort of magnifying it, instead my internal system goes the other way, which is let's minimize the intensity of this right now and get out. Yeah. And I can see this pattern through my life in small things, like getting out of a moment of intimacy, a moment of joy, a moment of contact, and bigger things like being out of some kind of relationship, just getting out, disappearing from a relationship because it's too, the loss is too much. And the mistake, I mean, of course, there's a ton of mistakes in there, but one of the mistakes in there is that somehow I'll avoid the bigger losses, the bigger griefs by making sure I don't have these ones, I don't feel this too much, which is a lie. Because, like, as you said, there's no getting out of this. So I'm feeling very grateful to have this, for us to be in this conversation about the ways that we get ourselves stuck in this. And like I said before, the way through that I'm finding at the moment is, what if I think for me the learning is both to grieve, to actually let myself grieve, and to love. So to sit with Lior and play music and feel the joy of it and grieve it at the same time, like let myself feel, actually feel, this is so beautiful and it will end. There'll be a time that we don't do this. And the more I let myself feel the grief in it, the more actually I feel the joy in it as well. They both come together. And the deal where I try not to feel one of them in order to feel the other just doesn't work out, actually.
God, Justin, it's such a thing. Like, I can't really imagine. I haven't had this experience. I have with my niece particularly, maybe this is why I can feel it, but there's something about music as well that just adds to the brutality of the whole situation. To have your child express themselves in the way that Lior does, and to feel connected because of the music that they're expressing themselves with at the same time as who they are, and all of the everything mixed together of how they learned, and it's all just a moment. You know, it's all just a fleeting something. And it's just imagining you in that and what it takes to stay in the magnitude of the feeling of the grief, joyness is so, so, so big. And of course we're made for that. You know, humans are made for this. We have these unexplainable, mysteriously expansive hearts that grow when another child comes along, or when we meet someone new that we didn't even imagine existed, and there they are, or a friendship that is just deeply moving, or whatever, or a film that completely grabs us because of the themes in it, or whatever. So we're made for this, and yet it hurts. You know, that hurt is just, like, it would really help if we could just get used to being hurting in this way, in this aching kind of, like, we didn't have to turn away from it just because it ached. You know, there's something about us that we just go, oh no, I don't want to do that because it hurts. And this is, I think, what this conversation is an invitation to, is being able to stay no matter what's arising, and not do all of the things, like make some small choices whenever we can to say, what if I don't get up off the piano stool in this moment? What if I just soften and be here and let myself be broken? What does that mean? What does it bring? What does it mean for the people around me? You know, wander into that territory And it feels really, really vulnerable, even more vulnerable. And I think that's the other thing about this is the more I love, the more there is to lose. That's the bind. Just like, oh God, here I go again. I can feel myself expanding again. I can feel myself loving more. How am I supposed to cope with this? How am I supposed to embrace and allow and welcome and grow when it's so excruciating? And yet, of course, that's the only thing there is to do. It's really beautiful in that image of you and Lior at the piano. It's kind of everything, really, isn't it? It's so beautiful.
I'm so glad for your invitation at the end of your poem about maybe we have to practice letting ourselves being smashed to smithereens, because the big smash to smithereens will come when that this time is that time. You say. And so the sort of wild experiment I've hatched in the last few days, which is probably influenced, I'm sure, by your words as well, is to practice letting myself feel what you're talking about, not just when I'm sitting on the piano stool next to my son singing music, but in the small things. I often think of you when it's dishwasher time, Lizzie. So I've been, because of our conversation about dishwashers, well, I've been practicing this. We were getting ready yesterday for a big family celebration. So a big festival time in the Jewish world this weekend. And we were getting ready yesterday, and there was lots of preparing food and washing dishes and things. And so I was practicing, can I let myself feel the joy and the heartbreak of just this very ordinary thing of getting the cutlery out of the drawer and cleaning the surfaces and washing up the pots and pans? Because I'm quite used to feeling nothing that's trying to push it all away there as well. And if I can feel a little bit the right here, the extraordinariness of being able to do that, and then, you know, just having my hands in the hot water, but then the extraordinariness of being able to do that with people I love, and then sort of gradually sort of letting my heart dilate enough. I'm finding that practicing it in the small places is helping me a lot, so that when I sit down in the big places, like we're singing together, and it's really big feeling. I've started to do a little bit of the work somewhere else where actually it's also really helpful. It's really helpful to fall in love with the realness and the grief of washing the dishes, actually. But it so helps with my heart expanding here, speaking to you, or being in a family situation, or frankly doing work that I love. When I contract in the same way, like doing the work I really long to do, gone. So practicing in the little places seems to be the way, the way I'm finding myself, my way into this.
That's such a lovely place to end our conversation, Justin, with this invitation to practice in the little places. And for me, it's the Weet-Bix and the baths and the ordinary eating dinner on our laps, kind of scrubbing the oven-ness. And I'm really grateful to feel this breathed in to this day. And really grateful to be here with you and to gently let this unfold between us, this delicacy, this vulnerability as well. So thank you. And thank you, everyone, for being here with your open hearts and your own vulnerabilities and your own ways of avoiding all of this. I want to say thank you for joining in the way that I imagine everyone joins in, which is to really be present to the conversation and really be here with us. I feel joined by the unseen listeners of this, Justin. It's lovely. So we will be here again next week. And thank you for being here with us on whatever platform you're on. And please keep joining us, and please let anyone else know that you think would be supported by, inspired by. Let them know that we're here as well. We'd love to have them in the community with us.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.